La selección china de personas que presentan al mundo la antorcha olímpica se ha transformado en una lección de derechos humanos para la Unión Americana. Beatriz Salas amplía la información.
Decidir sobre quiénes serán los portadores de la antorcha en la ceremonia inaugural de los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno en Pekín es la responsabilidad de China, y Estados Unidos no está en posición de hacer comentarios despectivos. Así respondió Pekín a la reciente interferencia de Washington, quien aseveró que la elección de China del atleta de la etnia Uyghur de Nijir Jilamujian para llevar la antorcha olímpica es un esfuerzo de Pekín para distraer la atención del llamado genocidio en la región de Xinjiang.
Los llamados comentarios de genocidio de Estados Unidos son la gran mentira del siglo y exponen su intento de politizar los Juegos Olímpicos de invierno y su siniestra intención de utilizar el tema relacionado con Xinjiang para difamar a China.
China asimismo acusó a Estados Unidos de mentir de manera descarada sobre las minorías étnicas, mientras olvida sistemáticamente discriminaciones en su propio suelo.
Estados Unidos llevó a cabo un genocidio contra los nativos americanos en el pasado y ha discriminado sistemáticamente a las minorías raciales a largo plazo. La población de nativos americanos se ha desplomado de 5 millones a finales del siglo XV a unos 250 mil a principios del siglo XX, reduciéndose a una vigésima parte. ¿Qué es el genocidio? Las políticas que Estados Unidos ha impuesto a los nativos americanos son un verdadero genocidio.
Zhao, además de criticar la discriminación racial contra los africanos y asiáticos en Estados Unidos, dijo que elegir a un atleta de la etnia Uyghur muestra que la política de China de promover los deportes de invierno y mejorar la salud de las personas está beneficiando a individuos de todos los grupos étnicos y prueba que no existe discriminación.
Lo que Estados Unidos debería estar haciendo es revisar cuidadosamente sus propios crímenes históricos contra los nativos americanos y tomar medidas concretas para reducir la discriminación racial contra estas personas y otras minorías raciales, como los africanos y asiáticos.
China, en reiteradas ocasiones, ha instado a Estados Unidos a dejar de usar los asuntos vinculados con Xinjiang para difundir mentiras, interferir en los asuntos internos de China o intentar detener el desarrollo del país. Advierte que, de lo contrario, Pekín dará una respuesta más contundente a la luz del desarrollo de la situación. Beatriz Salas con información de Niloufar Shakuri, Hispan TV Noticias.
Migrantes de todos los rincones del mundo duermen bajo su mismo cielo estrellado. Me los encuentro en las calles, en los cines, en los supermercados, y el olor de sus comidas me embriaga de placer. Todos ellos son mis vecinos.
Y yo aquí vivo, bajo sus leyes domésticas, pago impuestos y mis manos producen la riqueza nacional.
Soy parte de esa comunidad que vive, trabaja y sueña con una mañana mejor para nuestras familias.
Casi todos migrantes como yo, casi todos soñadores como yo.
Trabajemos pues en la construcción de otra nación que nos haga dignos.
Seamos los arquitectos de nuestro sueño colectivo.
Esta radio no tiene comerciales porque tú nos apoyas. Si ya has hecho una aportación económica, te damos las gracias. Si no, hazlo ahora en kpfk.org o llama al 818-985-5735.
Así llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
got three quarters of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly to annul the legal nonprofit status of Fundacion Xaquiquetzal and 14 other non-governmental organizations. President.
They say everyone should have their heart broken at least once. If that is how you grow emotionally. Well, I have been misused by many, many, many men. But nothing can compare to how you treated me. At times it really felt as though the pain was here to stay. And though it's many years ago, I feel it today.
Well, I'm a bit tired to be doing this, but this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The October 13th, 2022 edition, that's the Thursday show. 2 hours, I hope. We'll see if I get that far. It's, I'm not sure why I'm so tired today, but I'm tired. Anyway, upcoming on next Tuesday at 9 in the morning, according to Megan Bunch, who's a sort of a, I don't know what her official position is, but she was second in command on, I was going to say falsification expert. I'm not really sure if that's fair, though. I think she is sort of a tag-along and help-along to then-falsification mistress Susie O'Hara. And now, of course, it's Matt Huffaker, the city manager himself, who is handling the controlling the narrative, as one might say, about the available shelter, that all is going well, that there's no problems really, that they have suddenly miraculously acquired all kinds of places for people to go while they're destroying their tents and their living situation and their property that they've accumulated over 2 years in San Lorenzo benchlands. So you're going to be hearing more of that. Too much more of that, but it is indeed happening. I'm doing a lot of improvising on this show, so just tag along with me and see what happens.
But I don't want to verify it.
Or at least you'll hear what happens, and I'll figure it out as I go.
Or if your kitty had a litter, look, just follow me on Twitter. I don't care about your family tree, and I certainly don't want you. Drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't
believe that's not have that foot running here again.
So let's begin by rolling with the police abuse roundup, although I'm not quite sure that I'm sure this is not going to be comprehensive. Here's a couple of stories, though. Here's one from today's Santa Cruz Sentinel, or the Sentinel, as I traditionally call it. October 13th edition, Santa Cruz Sentinel. Northern California officer fired over deadly shooting. Vallejo. A police officer who in 2020 fired a rifle five times through a windshield of an unmarked police vehicle, that's in 2020 money, 2 years later, fatally shooting a San Francisco Bay Area man, was fired last week for violating several police department policies, authorities said. Pausing briefly to note this. Again, he hasn't been prosecuted, he hasn't been arrested. He hasn't been prompted to change in the entire policies of the Vallejo Police Department or its hiring practices or its practices for determining how sane, competent, and well-balanced its officers are. No, in 2 years' time, he was ultimately fired for shooting a rifle five times through the windshield of an unmarked police car, killing a San Francisco Bay Area man. Notice also that why was this done? Because he violated several police department policies. She's from doesn't want to admit any culpability for violating the law. Certainly not. No, he just violated certain policies. The policies were right, but he violated the policies by firing five times. Now, of course, we'll have to read on and see what more is said in this relatively brief story, actually. But it goes to kind of buttress my own sense and what I've been told by my police abuse, or actually sheriff abuse expert mentor, Richard Quigley, way back in the day, 15 years ago. He was the man who constantly called out the sheriffs. So he liked a lot of them. He just hated the upper management, some of the officers. But he pointed out that it's when you file a complaint against a police department or a sheriff's department, file one for violating a policy of their department, not for violating the law, because you won't get anywhere with that unless you eventually go to court and are lucky enough to find an attorney or learn it enough to be able to do it yourself, or with the experience to do it yourself. How about policies is the way to go? I don't think I've ever done that, though. Apparently, I haven't been following the advice of the late departed Richard Quigley. Long may he reign. I'll be remembered, anyway. The Vallejo police officer who fatally shot Sean Monterosa in June 2020 was terminated on October 3rd after an independent third-party investigation determined he violated several department policies, including using deadly force, which was not objectively reasonable, failing to de-escalate the situation, and failing to activate his body-worn camera in a timely manner, the Vallejo Police Department said in a statement. I guess I have to ask, how long did it take the Vallejo Police Department to learn that he had failed to activate his body-worn camera in a timely manner? I mean, it must have been more than, I don't know, the time it takes to check whether the camera was turned on and when it was turned on and when the guy was shot dead by five shots in the windshield. That's what I would think, but then again, I'm not the department said it was not naming the officer because of an order issued by a Solano County judge. Monterosa's family and Melissa Nold, a civil rights attorney, who has been advising the family, identified the terminated officer as Jarrett Tone. Well, at least the AP got the name of the murderous officer who killed this guy 2 years ago. I'm not sure, it seems to have taken them a while because this story, as we know, just came out in October. Today, actually. The Vallejo Police Officer Association did not immediately return a message seeking comment. Police said they initially thought Monterosa, 22, was carrying a handgun in his waistband. but he actually had a hammer in the pocket of a sweatshirt he was wearing. Officers in two unmarked police cars were responding to reports of suspects stealing from a pharmacy amid national protests over the killing of George Floyd in the shooting. Alert, alert, black protest in progress. Monterosa was suspected of stealing from a pharmacy and was killed after being shot in the head once after Kong fired his rifle through the windshield of an unmarked pickup truck carrying several officers. In other words, it's not really clear. Well, I guess one can feel threatened even if one is in company with other officers. Just, I wonder if this is just sort of the mindless, robotic, well-trained police officer machine rolling into operation. In other words, it's just something they do, or as one of my mission forms, activist friends once put it, best practices for police departments to shoot to kill. And I guess shoot multiply to kill. And if it is best practice, however, police officers associations or other groups can call it that, and I don't think it is a common practice in Europe either, which I think I actually looked into some years ago. Michelle and Anthony Monterosa, Sean Monterosa's sisters, said in a statement posted on social media that they were grateful for the administrative step of the video being released by the Vallejo Police Department a month after the shooting, showing the officer firing in the backseat of a moving vehicle. It's not clear whether it was released because there were such good guys. People were threatening to surround the police station because the judge ordered it. I don't think there was any legislation. They pointed out, the sisters did, that the investigation into their brother's killing also unearthed evidence of an attempt to cover it. Quote, after 2 years, we continue to demand that the California DOJ, Department of Justice, under the leadership of Rob Bonta, take immediate action to prosecute and hold the responsible officers accountable for their crimes. Was destroyed, leading city officials to seek a criminal investigation into how that happened. Last year, Bonta said he would review the investigation. His office was under the name of the to a request. Today's Sentinel, Northern California officer fired over deadly shooting. And no doubt some other police department.
Well, I've been lying.
Slightly reminiscent of the case of Officer David LaFavor in Santa Cruz, who, in a rage, sprayed pepper spray directly into the mouth of an activist in a demonstration. Admittedly, after the activist had punched him. And he eventually, when the only independent investigation ever done in Santa Cruz of a police incident that I'm aware of during my tenure here, so to speak, during my time here, the cop was fired, LaFavor was fired, and reappeared soon after in a jurisdiction in the South Bay. He actually pulled me over at one point. Not really in any malicious way. He was just being friendly, kind of police. Police department is friendly. He recognized my vehicle. I've got a driving car with lots of bumper stickers on it, and he wanted to say hello and give his regards with siren, of course, and the whole colors. And I didn't have a ticket or anything, but he was a part of another police department, just as. One wonders if, even though it's almost 30 years later than that incident happened to me, 25 years later, times haven't changed. Officers are likely to be rehired. desires.
Okay, talking with Russell Brown here in Santa Barbara.
Please, 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 set me free.
Just advised me that litigating the oversized vehicle ordinance, which we've been having our own problems with our own ordinance.
Set me free.
Success, actually, in the Coastal Commission appeal. But you are apparently, you tried to negotiate with the city.
I'm sure you've been following that case. It had a kind of an agreement and a pause. The city would not enforce its anti-RV law or anti-oversized vehicle law if the plaintiffs seeking to protect the rights of the homeless folks in the vehicles would hold off for a bit on their lawsuit. But they eventually, I understand, they reached this settlement. Have you been following that?
I was not aware of that case, no.
Interesting.
I don't know. It might be of interest for you to look at.
And the settlement has been described in the papers, but I don't think it was finalized yet by a judge. But it would involve several miles of strip, which RVs could then park on as a kind of a safe zone. Has that been proposed to you, or what is your thought about that kind of a proposal without necessarily revealing your legal strategy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know kind of what the scope is of what's possible and what's not in Santa Barbara. Possible is to have a defined.
They hate you if you're clever, and they despise.
I think the city would probably say we've already even defined that to be. There's a program in Santa Barbara.
Till you're so fucking crazy, you can't follow the rules.
The issue, generally, that my plaintiff has,
working class hero is something to be,
and it in fact requires you to forfeit some of your constitutional rights.
A working class hero is something to be.
So if you park in the lot,
when the tortured and scared,
but you can't have anyone come to visit you, and you can't even interact with other people in the lot. So
then they expect you to pick
that kind of freedom of association, the freedom to have friends, talk to people, and not be confined.
When you can't really function, you're so full of fear.
The impact of that is basically, when we look at the whole picture of the law,
a working class hero is something to be.
More or less harassed, basically. Or you can go in a safe parking.
A working class hero is something to be.
Now, does this say parking law, Russell? Is it a 24-hour law where you can go in and out, or do you have to stay there? What do you?
There's those were some of the other problems.
You think you're so clever and classless and free.
Like, they didn't have a 24-hour law. They don't have an emergency law, meaning, like, I just had a domestic violence situation. I need to get out of my house. I don't have money for a hotel, but I have a car. Where can I go that's safe?
Working class hero is something to be.
I don't know if I mentioned the state parking. You know, it's for both RV,
a working class hero is something to be.
People living in normal sized cars.
What percentage of the room at the RV and car dwelling, I should say, vehicularly housed people have actually been served by the state parking
program? First, you must learn how to smile as you kill.
That's hard for me to say.
If you want to be like the folks on the hill.
That's something I can come up with just because I don't have the numbers right in front of me. It's probably like a quarter.
A working class hero is something to be.
Or less, I guess I would say. You could probably accommodate a quarter or less. The thing about
a working class hero is something to be.
You know, if a lot of the people who are unhoused, if they're harassed enough, they'll just move to an area where they won't be harassed.
Be a hero,
so people have moved out of the city of Santa Barbara, which is the ordinance we're talking about, just in Texas City. And they moved either into the unincorporated area or over to the city of Goleta, which is the next city north. And Goleta also has an oversized vehicle ordinance, but they have exception zones. So there's, like, areas you can park in the industrial area during certain hours where you won't be ticketed.
Is there much, has ticketing slowed since you began working on this lawsuit and then talking with the city about a settlement and then continuing in the absence of an agreement?
I don't know if I've been told this, but I have the impression they're not really ticketing people much. But I don't know that that's true. I haven't seen the actual numbers. But what I do know is that the patients that I do have paint an interesting picture in terms of who's getting tickets, how they're getting tickets, where they're getting tickets.
A sense that this is having an immediate deterrent effect yet. Where am I? What would you say?
No, I think there's a deterrent effect. I just don't know whether they're still actually affecting people. In the sense that they're still trying to deter people. I know the city is also, I mean, this law is just one law in a large arsenal of laws they have that they can use to go after homeless people. And what I've been seeing and hearing in Santa Barbara since, I want to say, the end of June, both anecdotally and in the statistics, is an uptick in citations for homeless individuals or what you might call something that the people in Santa Barbara would appreciate.
people come to you who are homeless or advocates for them and ask you to defend other abusive practices by police or other abusive laws?
Police giving misinformation and writing tickets for camping when they're not supposed to and stuff like that.
One of the things we have here as the hundreds of people in the bench lanes, essentially the large campground that's been was created by a court decree after a lawsuit by the Union of Homeless up here about 2 years ago. But that has been, the court order was rescinded, the city decided to continue allowing the campground to exist. However, recently it has been slicing it off salami style, bit by bit, and hundreds of people have been essentially forced out, using, of course, the pretext that they have shelter when, in fact, they don't. They have some shelter, but it is restrictive shelter. It's distant, hard to reach, and there's all kinds of problems with it. Some report others find it okay. I know that one of the issues, of course, is the primary defense of the Martin versus Boise decision, which has been, of course, I think, I understand talking with Nancy McCready, one of the local activists, intensified, or should we say, gotten a little stronger because of the Grant Johnson versus Grant's Pass case. Any comments on that?
According to a very respected attorney,
called his own.
It also applies to civil.
And now he's bound for glory.
And it would also be involved in allowing for class action lawsuit. Can you explain to folks what that means?
Yeah, so the kind of law that was in here,
and he sang and he rode upon the rail. And he got on board when the sailors had to sail.
You can't punish something.
He said all the words that needed to be said. He fed all the hungry souls that needed to be fed. And now he's bound for glory on his own. And now he's bound for glory.
Defender or attorney, you know, challenge that.
Oh, you know, I'm going to be like, what?
Sam and Tom for homeless folks for poor people. Have there been any attorneys in Santa Barbara who have felt accepted to actually indicate their willingness to, let's say, take on a case that says something like, well, you were arrested for something that's clearly legal under Martin Luther King, and then suddenly they found through research that it might be excluded evidence of other things like drug use. And is that kind of thing, are attorneys willing to take these cases? Admittingly, they're not going to make much money for them. I mean, what's your sense about that?
I think that's probably, and that's why I've personally been reaching out to, like, the public defender, and there's a conflict attorney, the public defender out of the month. There's, like, a group of attorneys that take that. I've talked to them, too, because they see almost all these people, you know, most of these homeless people, unhoused people don't have the resources for an attorney. A lot of them don't even reach out to an attorney. And, you know, from a public defender slash conflict attorney standpoint, you're really not worried about are they going to get charged with, you know, this little camping thing and trespass. You're kind of like, you know, let's get them out of custody and maybe in now bus line in Montgomery, had some folks sitting in the back, and it wasn't a coincidence that old school land. But that Martin Luther King put a boycott on that town. He just walked with his people, and they shut that bus line down. And I've been to the mountaintop, and I have a dream.
Up and running now, so I do get listings coming through that. And usually the ones I'm taking are not so much Martin B. Boise ones, although that might change.
I preached and lived non-violence until the very end. On the hotel porch in Memphis, mankind lost his best friend, 'cause he fought for human rights as he moved from town to town. And as what he did to him when some redneck shot him down. And I've been to the mountaintop, today I have a dream. Don't you ever forget the words of the Martin Luther King
and the conflict attorney.
Well, one of your former colleagues, people, another guy in the Committee for Social Justice,
Show up early,
How much time would you say is consumed? And if one were to undertake a case like this, I take it you're doing it pro bono, or you get paid?
Thank you.
our equal protection.
And when does the next hearing or decision, when is it likely to come?
I don't think there's going to be much going on for this case for the end of the year. In terms of, like, it'll probably be most of like, the discovery phase. I know we've got additional depositions we want to conduct. And I hope we'll have those done by the end of the year.
I guess one of the key questions is the one I asked you before. While all this legal work or legal waiting is happening, and you said you may not have all the information about this, but is it your impression that this city is, I guess I got the impression you said they weren't, but is this in any way deterring them from issuing tickets for vehicles? I mean, or are they still coming in? Are people still reporting they're being cited?
I'm trying to recall my conversation with the city attorney, but I want to say that they're not citing me anymore, or they're warning me first or something like that. But, you know, don't pin me to that. That's just kind of a vague recollection of the conversation I had so much to do with them.
And have people come to you?
I haven't heard much from people I know who are in our communities. Like, oh, we're getting tickets, so we're getting tickets.
Here in Santa Cruz, what they do is not so much for the tickets for these, but people camping around, they simply bully them away. They warn them and threaten them. And that's how that works. Are you hearing anything about that either ceasing, increasing, or remaining the same for people in vehicles?
Bottom 110 degrees. The Santa Barbara, then north is the Lita, and then
went outside.
Now in Santa Cruz, we had a different approach to the issue of the OBO, which I think I may have mentioned. That we took it to the Coastal Commission. A number of people did, and they were successful in getting the Coastal Commission to say, we're not going to rubber stamp your law. It's going to require a substantial hearing to make sure that it's an issue of substance. They did the same thing 5 or 6 years ago when I took this issue up at the recommendations of a councilman, and they said the same thing. It didn't deter the city from running through the same rigmarole. Have you considered using the Coastal Commission? Are you in the is much of the city in the Coastal Commission zone?
With my poor black
didn't have no money,
didn't have no lawyer,
yeah,
they
yeah.
wouldn't plead so my case. So I said, I burned David Burn, David Burn.
No one
Lord, and no one
to
see me now. No one turned, burn, David Burn.
Yeah, the ACLU and the Disability Rights Coalition up here, as well as another group called Santa Cruz Cares, did the ACLU brief. Was actually so powerful that when it sent a second brief to the city, the staff of the Coastal Commission locally first supported the city, and they reversed themselves on getting the ACLU second brief, mainly because essentially the city is it's only just impacted homeless people from the hours of midnight and 4 or 5. But in fact, it also banned 54% of all space 24 hours a day in the city. So
it's
I told you 15 minutes, you've been going on for 45. I appreciate your doing this, but I think I want to give you a chance to sign off and maybe take a break. Difficult for me to break up this long interview you just heard with Russell Brown, attorney in Santa Barbara, at convenient intervals. I apologize for that. I hope you got something out of it anyway, all you listeners, or whoever may be listening. Here's a tune I never heard before called Crawl Out Through the Fallout by Sheldon Allman. It's a 1960 novelty song, and I hope it remains a novelty and not a prediction of tomorrow's Ukraine situation, which frankly, is far more likely.
Can't find no heaven, I don't care where they go. Crawl out through the fallout, baby, when they drop that bomb. Crawl out through the fallout with the greatest of aplomb. When your white count's getting higher, hurry, don't delay. I'll hold you close and kiss those radiation burns away. Crawl out through the fallout, baby, to my loving arms. Through the rain of strontium 90. Think about your hero when you're at ground zero and crawl out through the fallout back to me. Crawl out through the fallout, baby, you know what I mean. Crawl out through the fallout, 'cause they said this bomb was clean. If you cannot find the way, just listen for my song. I'll love you all your life, although that may not be too long. Crawl out through the fallout, baby, to my loving arms, while those ICBMs keep us free. When you hear me call out, baby, kick the wall out and crawl out through the fallout back to me. 'Cause you'll be the only girl in the world. Why don't you crawl out through the fallout back to me? Why don't you crawl out through the fallout back to me? Why don't you crawl out through the fallout back to me?
So on Tuesday, there was a late shitty council meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council. It started at 3:30, very late, actually. And I think it may have something to do with the SEIU strike and the continuing attempt to talk the SEIU bosses, the negotiators, into agreeing to avoid a strike, which actually I thought had been done. The Sentinel reported that there was going to be a strike was avoided. But then again, I guess it was yesterday or today, it revealed that, nope, strike was going ahead starting on the 17th, which is Monday, because the membership had rejected the union bosses or union negotiators' terms that they had agreed with the city manager and the city council of Santa Cruz, which is probably a good thing, though I'm not sufficiently knowledgeable. And it didn't come soon enough to stop the destruction of the fifth section of the Benchlands survival encampment. Phase 5, as it was called. Phase 5.2, however, also known as Phase 6, which I guess will be the sixth phase, but somebody called it. Supposed to be happening on the 18th, Tuesday at 9 o'clock, as I mentioned before. And if there's a strike on starting on the 17th, workers who are going to do that, dozers, and no doubt Lieutenant Jones will be leading the pack with his trusty camp crushers. Rightly optimistic and enthusiastic. When I talked to him, PR events, anything about manager's report given by the associate assistant city manager at the city council meeting. We're going to join it after she's got her slides ready. You can actually review it if you want to go back to the city council website and you can see the presentation she made. Although I think most of her interest lies in the statement that she made, someone most victorious of which was there are some people working with HUD who are trying to do that. And if you're interested in supporting them, call 831-423-4255. HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Interestingly enough, they already have seven or eight plaintiffs, and they've got the forms that require that they need to get things like transportation over to San Jose, people to put together the forms, the declarations, and take the declarations necessary. But let's hear what the managers, the voices of the managers,
Laura Schmidt, Assistant City Manager, for a report on the state.
Thank you, Mayor. Bonnie, if I could get you home. I'll be giving you my first update on the San Lorenzo Park restaurant's closures. Right now, there is... Go ahead and go to the next slide, please. Right now, there is a citywide team making Herculean efforts to restore the bench land. That closed on October 5th is closed. However, they are continuing to clean it up. You can go to the next slide.
And it's kind of interesting, the double speak, the Orwellian language, as in George Orwell's 1984, the dystopian story of overweening, always at war, lying government that actually manufactures lies and changes history in order to facilitate whoever, whatever country they're fighting against, facilitate its war with whatever country they're fighting against. Her claim that this is some sort of restoration project, although that's what it's called, is actually a massive demolition of the homes, camps, and property of hundreds of people who are living there, and their forcible move into areas that are behind. They're inaccessible except through shuttles that you cannot receive visitors in, where there's a curfew, a whole situation which is would be considered, well, I would consider it a form of punishment, or at least high restriction, and which certainly doesn't appeal to people, not just people who are drug users, although I certainly wouldn't appeal to them either, since they're not allowed to do that, and that is... That has been permitted for reasonably so, because it's essentially the right to privacy is involved here, even involving so-called illegal drugs. It may not be in the best interest of any particular individual at any particular time, but that's up to that individual, not to the overweening government to make a judgment of that kind. The real trade is being done. The demolition is being done not for the benefit of the campers, but to quiet the apprehensions of nearby residents who don't even have a claim that there's an increased crime problem that impacts them. There may be an increased crash problem, but part of the problem has to do with the city's skimping on facilities to help folks and also cramming many, many more people in than should be there and not opening up other encampment areas that need to be opened up and needs to be opened up years ago, given the homelessness and housing crisis.
Today, they noticed closure of Zone 5A, and they closed Zone 5A, and they noticed Zone 5B for closure, and that will close from today on the 18th.
That will be at 9 a.m. Just as the city has made no real thorough survey of the number of people who are eventually, the number of people willing to take the shelter offered, or either unwilling or unable to take it because of disability in certain cases. They they're also not giving you any stats about where people have gone and how many people are flooding into the neighborhoods.
The team is working as quickly and as much as possible to address the other impacts that are being raised. We hear the neighbors, we hear the council members, and they are really making it every day. As you'll see in the next couple of slides, the work that they are doing is enormous.
It's not quite clear what kinds of efforts they're making, other than perhaps preparing to play whack-a-mole to wherever people go to set up their tents next.
Bonnie, if you can go to the next slide. This is an example of a zone before the cleanup. So the picture on your left is zone 4, before cleanup, and the picture on the right is zone 2, after cleanup.
And I have to, I guess I have to pause to review to see if I can find that set of photos. So the slides show pictures of zones 4 before and after. What they do not show you, what they show you is after there is a completely barren area bordered by fences. Before there is a lump of piles of trash all over the area. What they don't show you is what happened, say, 4 hours before that trash was created by the destruction in bulldozers. And that happened through the crushing of all the camps, the snapping of the tent poles, the slashing of the canopies and the easy-ups. And the essentially piling of all property into trash heaps. You don't get to see that in this presentation, which of course is very telling, because they don't want you to understand the destruction the city is wreaking in the name of planting new grass in the
a working class hero is something. This is an example of a zone before the cleanup. So the picture on your left is zone 4 before cleanup, and the picture on the right is zone 3 after cleanup. You guys will have received an update on the 7th that about 21 tons of trash had been picked up to date. We just got an update from the team today, and as of yesterday, that number had changed to 203 tons.
As mentioned before, this is very deceptive, although you can get a kind of an impression, a more realistic, truthful impression. If you look at this comparison of the cleanup of Zone 4 before cleanup, and then Zone 3 after cleanup, these slides side by side, there is in the Zone 4 a very slight part of Zone 5, which has not been touched.
And you think you're so clever and classless and free.
Set up with no piles of trash apparent.
But you still fucking distinguished from
the Zone 4 cleanup. In essence, the police are creating the trash that the city workers are cleaning up. That this woman is complaining and bemoaning the fact that there's so much trash, giving the impression that the homeless people are creating the trash. The homeless people have been living in this area, where I don't think many of us would like to live if we had our choice, and they probably don't either, in massively overcrowded circumstances with really shitty, in all senses of the word, trash disposal and sanitation. There's more from the city manager's terror-filled tale.
And because I like to put in terms that people can understand, 203 tons is equivalent to 138 Toyota Priuses.
A working class hero is something to be.
If you put 138 Priuses end to end, that goes from City Hall to the London Nelson Community Center. That's how much trash has been picked up. And you can imagine the size of a Prius as well. So it's very substantial.
And you can actually imagine the compaction and the compression of people and property that was being forced upon the encampment by the city, which was moving everyone into this Benchlands encampment, calling it a sanctioned campground as early as March, and then destroying other ancillary campgrounds around the city, such as the ones at Highway 109, such as the Hell's Trail, such as the one former Camp Paradise encampment, such as the encampment across the river along the levee, and shoveling everybody into this campground so that the people that shoveled into a space between the Dragon's Head Bridge and the Water Street Bridge. And yeah, that would, if you can imagine how many people and how much debris was shoveled in there, if you can imagine just a lengthy line of Priuses, ranging all the way across the city. That's the city. That's the city's church. That's what the city is.
And quite obvious that what the team's doing. As far as the next slide shows you, the aerial view of the cleanup. So the five zones that have been cleaned up are outlined in red, and then the rest of the benchlands are what remains to be done.
At that point, they have cleaned up about half of the cleanup. They have destroyed about half of the encampment, at least that section that extended from the Dragon's Head Bridge. The walkway between the river stream and the duck pond, all the way to the water. But the next day, actually on the same day, Tuesday the 11th, they took out a chunk that essentially put them over, I think, the halfway mark. Still, there are 100 or more people there still. But they took a break to.
Sappy at the couch, said, tell me about it. Well, the whole thing started at 3 o'clock fast. It was all over by 4:15. I was down in the sea with some little lover when I peeked out from a man a whole car. Underneath him, a lot of stood wondering which way to go, a little cigarette on the parking meter, and walked on down the road. Down the corner by a hot dog stand, I seen a man. kissed us too. He screamed a bit and away he flew. Thought I was a communist. Cadillac window uptown, there was nobody around. I got into the driver's seat and drove down 42nd Street in my Cadillac. Good car to drive after a war.
Oh, sister, let's go down, let's go down, come on down. Oh, sister, let's go down, down in the river to pray.
Well, I remember seeing some ads, so I turned on Connell Rat, but I didn't pray, pay the Con Ed bill, so the radio didn't work so well. Turned on my record player.
Crown, good Lord,
it was Rock a Day Johnny singing, tell your ma,
oh,
tell your pa,
brothers,
I'm gonna grow
go down,
up and
let's go down, come on down, come on brothers, let's go down.
Now I was feeling kind of lonesome and blue. Somebody to talk to. So I called up the operator's time just to hear the voice of some guy. When you hear the beep, it will be 3 o'clock. She said that over an hour and I hung up. Well, the doctor interrupted me just about then, saying, hey, I've been having the same old dreams. Mine was a little different, you see. I dreamt the only person left after the war was me.
I didn't see you around. Let's go down, come on down, don't you wanna go down? Come on, brothers, let's go down.
Well, now time passed, and now it seems everybody's having them dreams. Everybody sees herself walking around, no one else. Half the people can be part right all the time. Some of the people can be all right part of the time, but can't be all right all the time. I think Abraham Lincoln said that. I'll let you be in my dream if I can be in yours. I said that.
That was Bob Dylan talking World War III blues, appropriate song at the moment, from his album Freewheelin' Bob Dylan from, 50, 60 years ago? And now back to Laura Schmidt, assistant city manager, talking to the city council.
War is life and war is death.
Councilmember Brown.
War is a vacuum.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the update. I'm hoping you can we can hear a little bit more about
war with black
efforts,
and war with brown, and war with everyone as the sound resounds.
Address
more than your bargain for.
Consequences of the Benchlands closure. Because you mentioned it, and so I know everybody's well aware that people, as they are moved out, as they're displaced, are finding other places to be, and we're seeing know, suffering, trash pile up nothing. And there aren't services available. And I mean, this is something that obviously I know we're all concerned about it. We've been on it for a long time. You know, what I see now is like we're going to just facing piles of trash around and doing cleanups, and it costs a lot of money. And advocate for early interventions on these and trying to get resources needed to waste management on a regular basis.
I noticed that this is a kind of, frankly, kind of a chicken shit tailing on the real issues, because it's been presented as a trash problem. Goodness, these homeless are a trash problem. In this way, it's kind of one step between the homeless and the trash. Not too far, not too far in descent to go there. I'm afraid that that may be the case. And I'm not saying it's some brown species either. There's some older. He doesn't point out, look, these were camps that people were living in that were destroyed. And you do not have places to put people for all the people in the encampment. You can hear the city mangler, Matt Huckabird, agree that that's the case. So what the hell are you doing destroying these camps before you have those available accommodations? I mean, you're, of course, you're making yourself legally liable, but what are you doing to human beings? I mean, that's obviously sort of secondary to the trash. At the expense of the trash. You might say somebody that you're looking at sort of an attempt to do talk to in terms of maybe a money-minded council location. But I don't think you would rouse the community by talking.
I recognize that our challenge is that, but I worry that as the kind of community is going to let go on and it's less than resources. So I guess I would like to hear about what that means. You know, we're on it, we're thinking about it. What, and also we have a
okay, so at least he or she's kind of saying you're so damn vague in what you're saying is happening next, but we get a bit more specific and you think we're working to address the impacts. It's a Herculean job, yak, is what Laura Schmidt is saying. And so, you know, it's good that she thinks to tie her down in that, or at least to give her something a little more specific. She does say we've been doing this for a long, long time, but she isn't very specific about what she means by this. What this really is we are, they are, the city government is dispersing the campground without providing adequate shelter or resources for those who are dispersing. She could be very specific if this has been done repeatedly in the venture. On the last two or three go-arounds, at least maybe three or four go-arounds, once at one point creating the last camp, and another point shoveling people into the what was then the barbed wire police station guarded River Street campground that has become significantly better, as acknowledged. Should be acknowledged, and I suppose the city credited with helping 30 people. Yay. At a cost of what? I'm not sure how many. $80,000 per month, something like that. I mean, something ridiculous. In any case, I sputter, so let's.
And, I'm good at discussing the resources. So, I guess I would like to hear about what that means. We're trying, you know, we're on it, we're thinking about it. Like, what? And also, we have a public works and so overextended. What does that mean? Kind of.
Council Member Brown. I'll do a few introductory
remarks, and then our deputy city manager for homelessness response, Lisa Murphy, is also on the line. As you know, we have a broader three-year homelessness response plan, and the restoration though, and the benchlands is one component of it.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now, you see, they have a plan. These are the things that the city, past city manager types involved in homeless affairs have pulled out repeatedly, that they have a plan. They don't talk about any realistic, real shelter they have, or real campgrounds, or real services. It's all a future plan, which, of course, also then becomes an opportunity for getting more grant money, or more money from other government agencies.
The team is working as quickly as possible on all those components, and even the work that they're doing, Lorenzo and the Benchlands, has a strong component of outreach.
Working as hard as possible, strong component of outreach, a series of gobbledygook phrases that is as far from specific as can be for what's actually available in concrete ways. What kind of laundry service? What kind of storage is really being created? How many people is it serving?
And trying to fundamentally help the homelessness folks that are in residents in our city. So there are a lot of cleanup efforts that are happening, but there are also a lot of strategic, longer-term efforts and conversations that are happening in the county.
And, of course, the county will rush in to help. You see, this is their fallback, lick the butt of the city council position. The city council, including turncoat Justin Cummings, who actually used this argument to destroy the Ross camp, has really set the stage for the recall of the two council members who might have been with him, a powerful council majority, for dealing with this, for getting ahead of this whole problem before it got out of hand, as it now is. Huge numbers of people with no place to go, in wretched conditions, and endless lies about this situation, prettying up the scene by the city council and their well-paid employees.
And we are doing our best on all of those fronts, but we do have limited resources, and the teams are pretty exhausted right now.
So we're doing our best on all those fronts, but the team is exhausted. How much is the team able to do other than sending bulldozers and destroying campuses and cleaning? Or is she simply worried that they're not fast enough to create replanting of grass so that people can walk their dogs in the benchlands again, free from the apprehension and annoyance of some desperately poor people in third world countries that are worse than third world countries? They are living not just for the environmental problems, but a threat of endless eviction, unlike in the Valley of Brazil or in
It's still an all-hands-on deck, and we're doing as much as possible. And with that, I'll hand it over to Lisa Martin that can get
all series of cliches that are empty and meaning. Unless you talk specifically about exactly what particular progress you expect to make, where, how many people still are serving, and what's being done. That is not being discussed, nor has it been discussed in the last year.
Some more context, and as you know, your next quarterly update on the broader plan will be coming to you in December, I believe. Lisa?
So this is the, again, put it off till months ahead approach, which has been used repeatedly by first priority Butler, probably by the team for now, but I don't remember if it ever was by Lee Butler, and by the interim city manager, and then by Huffaker, who kept delaying. And you could actually hear this in the interviews I actually did with him personally in the Civic Auditorium. He kept saying that will be discussed at a later time. And he kept repeating that everybody will be served in a sort of a litany. because if everybody is not being served, you don't have any excuse for moving people out of the benchlands, because it becomes legally actionable by folks wanting to resist it.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. That was a great introduction. Thank you for the questions. While all of our attention has certainly been focused every day down the benchlands and the closure, I mean, the real boots on the ground is trying to provide those individuals with the housing that and shelter as they want it, and connecting them with services. So we have our outreach workers every day, but not everybody wants to accept that shelter offer of services.
And while that certainly is true, and it would be interesting if she tried to go into why they don't want to accept those services and what their concerns and complaints are, but she isn't saying how much is actually being offered compared to the total number of people that it's supposed to be offered to. This is the other assistant city manager person who was called in addition to Laura Schmidt.
And you know it and you see it. You're seeing it in your neighborhoods, and certainly you're hearing it from your constituents, that they are moving into other open spaces. And how do we address that? That is a good question. And our resources, because once a camp gets entrenched, then the cleanup effort, right, is overly expensive. And we don't want to rinse and repeat.
So what she's implying here is, first of all, she's saying, goodness, this is a real question. Of course, they should have thought of it 2 years ago or 1 year ago or 6 months ago when they were making plans and applying for grants to demolish this campground and moving money from the homeless housing matters. I don't know. I'm not sure it was the sanitation bay, whatever. They moved $1 million into this project. They don't have any answers, and they don't want to say, we don't have any answers, we'd like to go back to the drawing board, please let us go. They're not going to say that, and so instead they flap their lips, and you get to hear what comes out. And what comes out is toxic, anti-homeless, traditional crap, which is to say, we can't let these people form another encampment, because that would make it even harder to remove. Even though it might create some community, some stability, it's the most natural thing that would happen. People trusting each other, people helping each other, and also a place for services to go and be centralized. It's all been said before many times by many other people than myself.
A long line of people. And we cut them around.
And so having those spaces available to offer shelter, at least for in the short term, as some of these longer term projects come on board, that's really important. But we are trying to make every effort to prevent the entrenchment that is happening in the certain areas.
Again, no figures about what is available. And of course, dealing with the primary point of this removal, to get rid of the homeless, get them out of town, get them out of sight, don't let them get entrenched.
But right now, as we're focusing on benchlands and the limited shelter spaces available, makes that difficult, as you know, to try to relocate people from other open spaces.
Here we begin to get a new difficult. As you're going to hear later, I'm not sure we're going to get to this. What she's saying is that they don't have a shelter space, which is true. But it's been sort of acknowledged by Matt Huffaker earlier when he said he would pause before continuing to demolish the survival structures of the people there until he had places for them to go. But he hasn't paused. He either lied about it, changed his mind, or isn't aware of what's going on. I'm not sure. The fact of the matter is, what he's doing instead is saying, as long as Jeremy Leonard tells me I've offered places to people, and they've said no, or they were posting something on their tent and they didn't respond, or they said yes, but we haven't been able to give them, to put them on a list, that's going to be sufficient. It's not. But unfortunately, it will unfortunately do the trick unless there is some legal proof or some community proof, as there was in 2020 when this was being done in duck pond.
But we do have, I really want to encourage the community, we have an appointment assessment team twice weekly. And as complaints come through the FIST portal that's online, we
have an online portal, and they have a team that meets twice a week. And they're getting hundreds of thousands of dollars, $1 million to do this. But come to that executive. How much on the demolition?
I never be on the boy who used to tease
and think that I've known
for 27 years.
And it also is being asked about by Sam Brown.
Who lands it? The boss on the wall. Make efforts to address it. But not all
She's trying to explain why so many people are appearing on the streets. I wonder if the theory here isn't, gee, if we make it really uncomfortable for these people. Or as you just heard Russell Brown talk about, poke them enough. Poke them enough. They'll just get out of town and go somewhere else. That's the plan. We don't want to say that because that doesn't sound nice. So it's
County
is a really wonderful partner, but what has it done exactly?
I never want to shake the blood in my veins.
12, 23, 30
grandfather's face in his resting place. I make haste to learn and not waste everything my bullshit
game only
sees for my culture.
We're also looking at an additional short-term shelter at the Housing Matters location. So we have a few things on the
Now, she talks about additional shelter at Housing Matters. That is something that Matt Huffaker said to me when he was working on this, adding 70 additional pallets. That is to say, wooden, I don't want to call them coffin-like structures, but perhaps I should. I just talked to somebody earlier this afternoon about a meeting who has lived there for several years in one of those structures. I'm not terribly happy about it. It has no heating, it has no cooling, it has no electricity. It's a ways from the bathroom. It's got problems, and it doesn't really comport with an indoor shelter. It isn't really indoors. It's their excuse for driving people away who are outdoors and visible.
I have to listen to
but, of course, it doesn't work. And that, see, is the reason that she's saying, you have to understand there really isn't enough shelter, and that's only the reason. But, you see, what's going to be demanded is there isn't enough police to do it. Is that, or at least that's my fear. Let's hope that doesn't happen. But don't hope too hard. Keep your eyes open and watch what is happening.
Up there that we're still working on to come to fruition, that will help with the encampments. But you're right. While we're gaining more resources to try to address it, it's still a growing. It's not necessarily shrinking. It's growing.
If I could follow up, thank you for that. So one of the things that I'm trying here, and I probably...
And to interrupt Sandy Brown, the last speaker, the assistant to the assistant city manager, whatever organization is, was admitting, I think, that the problem is growing, not shrinking. And so she's really saying, I can't really handle it, which is an honest statement. I'm glad that she's making it. But, of course, it's being blithely ignored, as you will hear by the rest of the council. They're talking about a failure of leadership, a failure of allocation of resources, a failure of nerve, failure of compassion, or just plain common sense.
Probably that would differentiate between the question of the because we know that there are who are not for her variety of reasons going to be able to utilize the shelter or don't want to, and others have just barriers, access barriers, and all kinds of other things. I hear about these on a pretty regular basis because I talk to people who are located in the Benjamins. I talk to people who spend time there. And so, you know, there's just reasons why that's not going to be the solution for everyone. But what I'm talking about more is that we know that where people are, there's no trash cans, there's no regular trash pickup, that it piles up. So, you know, when we talk about entrenchment of camps, I'm talking about trash. And so I guess I'm just, and that is something that just requires labor.
And I suppose I should be happy that Sandy Brown is making a distinction between people's living quarters as best they can put them together and trash heaps, which is good. But she isn't denouncing this kind of confusion the way I am. I would like to see somebody do that at this meeting. And that may mean insulting the behavior of city employees that are destroying these structures. Well, it's time to do that.
And, you know, some, not really infrastructure, but some equipment to deal with. There's a cost to that, but, and you know, up front, it tends to, you know, I don't have any study in front of me to prove this, but I'm pretty sure, based on what the anecdotal evidence and what I hear from people who do this work, trash pickup, that doing it, you know, ongoing and up front, is a much more effective and cost-effective way to deal with it. So that's what I'm really hoping that we can...
And doing it up front means providing services like trash pickups, sanitary facilities, water. Otherwise, people will try to get these where they can, and they'll leave their debris where they must. And that's what happens all around the town and is probably happening now as I speak.
Planning conversations. I mean, that's just a reality. We can't, you know, we can hope that people are going to make use of shelter. We can hope that there's going to be enough spaces available, but people are still going to be in spaces that don't have and don't have the ability to remove refuse on a regular basis. So I just am wanting to, I'd like to see more of that be a priority for us. Right?
If I could answer.
And before we hear the answer that somebody makes to Sandy's concerns about, let's make it a priority that we, I guess, get ahead of this problem and either hire lots of trash men or, I don't know, have a lot of trash cans around town. I'm not sure what she's suggesting either exactly. She isn't saying leave the fucking benchlands alone until you've got a place for people to go, or at least keep your word, city mangler, Matt Huffaker. Don't go after them when your own employees are admitting you don't have enough shelter.
That's a response to that. We are moving in that direction. We just hired our field service supervisor that's solely focused on homelessness. We have the positions are going to be filled for the maintenance workers that...
So we've got a bunch of new people we've hired, and that's our solution. It doesn't give you any indication of what these people are going to be specifically doing, creating, buying, or constructing that would actually have something to do with the real problem. No, it's just we're hiring more employees so that more people can be paid, the budget gets bigger, and we can make it really clear that we're making Herculean efforts.
To be filled any time now, so... Definitely getting that team in place, that is one of the issues. We also do as...
Getting that team in place is one of the issues. No, it's not really one of the issues. The issue is finding real shelter and real services. And she's not talking about that.
We here have refuse bins placed. Oftentimes they're in locations that we're familiar with. They're vandalized and... people don't always make it to the trash, right? So
we'd like to help out, but they vandalize all these things, see? And so we can't really do it. So really it's the homeless's fault that we don't place adequate trash cans, that we don't have open and decent bathrooms. That's their fault. They would vandalize it. They do it all the time. And, of course, this is the mythology that is spread toxic mythology that leads eventually to a profound dehumanization of different groups in society.
So there are a lot of efforts that we have done. It's unfortunate that we'll put the big locking bins out there, not even locked, but then they're destroyed or fires. But we'll continue to do it.
The big bins are destroyed. They're destroyed by fire. How many of those have been destroyed by fire? I haven't heard of a lot of fires in bins. In fact, I haven't heard of one. I'm not sure what she's talking about.
Continue to address it. And if people see other spots that are high, that maybe we haven't quite seen, again, encourage the report so we can try to address whatever the environmental issues that might be happening. But the field service supervisors should be starting in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
See, now those supervisors are coming in, and they're going to do some supervising, see? But do you hear anything of substance in what she's saying? As I am having trouble finding anything here.
That's exciting, and those are the kinds of things that team is going to go after.
What kinds of things?
Thank you. Before I give up the floor, I just do want to say I appreciate the intensity and the magnitude of the effort at the Benchlands.
So this is Sandy Brown. Appreciates the intensity and the magnitude of the destruction of people's habitations and the creation of trash and the huge expenditure of money. Why would she say that other than to lick the butt of the staff? I mean, it's an example of how office corrupts you, although frankly, Sandy has never really been the most outspoken voice on homeless issues and the most militant voice on police abuse issues. She was a member of the Police Review Board. I knew her 25 years ago when she did that. And although she has done some things that I approve of and I applaud, like frequently making the consent agenda more accessible to people who come in like myself, but ever since she essentially broke her word for years regarding promises made about issues that she could easily address without any kind of council votes or majority. All she had to do was make a request to staff in a written way, and if it were turned down, it were turned down. I was simply asking that she make those requests for different kinds of information, for different kinds of actions, and she promised she'd do it right away, but never did. Well, back to her.
However, I just want to remind us all that a lot of the material that was removed was not necessarily trash. A lot of people's survival belongings were part of that, and, because people don't have anywhere to go. So
it's about time. Thank you, Sandy.
It is a cleanup issue. It's a challenge, but, I just want to remind people that there are other ways to think about addressing a lot of that material, but without doing it as a trash cleanup. I'll just leave it there for now, since this isn't an item on our agenda today. But thank you for the update.
Let's take a musical break. So these are the lyrics to Ecstasy's "This World Over." Ah, well, that's this world over. Ah, well, next one begins. Will you smile like any mother as you bathe your brand new twins? Will you sing about the missiles as you dry odd-numbered limbs? Ah, well, that's this world over. Ah, well, that next one begins. Ah, well, that's this world over, you sadly grin. Will you tell them about that far-off and mythical land, about their leader with the famous face? Will you tell them that the reason nothing ever grows in the garden anymore because he wanted to win the craziest race? That's this world over. Will you smile like any father? Will your children with your children on a Sunday hike, when you get to a sea of rubble and they ask, what was London like? You tell them, ah, well, that's the world over. Will you tell them about that far-off and mythical land and how a child to the Virgin came? Will you tell them that's the reason why we murdered everything upon the surface of the world so we can stand right up and say we did it in his name? That's this world over, or so it seems. That's this world over, the end of dreams. That's this world over, 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 and out. And according to the Linear Notes, Ecstasy member Andy Partridge had a child on the way when he wrote This World Over in 1984 as his protest to the saber-rattling of superpower leaders in the early 1980s. He said, "My first child was on the way, and I just thought that if I survived, how terrible it would be to have to tell her what life used to be like, that there was once a place called London, and it was a fantastic place, but it's not there anymore." This world open, oh well, next one begins. Will it smile like any mother? And it looks like we've almost run out of time, so I'm going to be playing the rest of this on my Sunday netcast. So you can also hear it if you're eager to jump the gun by going to the city's website. And it's about, let's see, it's about an hour and 13 minutes into the city's October 11th council meeting on live media, although I think it's now called, it's called View Media. So because we didn't get much music in, let's go out with a second song. And I guess maybe I'll be seeing you, if you're interested, Sunday morning at noon at the town clock. If you got tired of listening to the netcast that I start with at 9:30, because there's a anti-war protest against the war in Ukraine happening then. Well, here's the email that I received from Keith McHenry, Santa Cruz Rally for Peace. It's not Sunday. My mistake. Saturday, October 16th, 2022, 12 noon. So I'm glad I'm mentioning this now. That's day after tomorrow. It's at the town clock, Pacific and Water. And the demands are say no to nukes, end the policy of first use, rejoin nuclear weapons treaties the U.S. pulled out of, take U.S. nuclear weapons off hair trigger alert, get rid of ICBMs, land-based nuclear missiles. I think there's a few more. Support congressional action to avert nuclear war, and move the money to human needs, not war. Let's hear another anti-warish type song, and maybe I'll see you there on Saturday, although it's going to be a busy day for me, so we'll see. And here are some of the lyrics of Dancing with Tears in My Eyes by Ultravox. Dancing with tears in my eyes, weeping for the memory of a life gone by, dancing with tears in my eyes, living out a memory of a love that died. I'm five, and I'm driving home again. It's hard to believe that it's my last time. The man on the wireless cries, "It's over, it's over." Dancing with tears in my eyes, weeping for the memory of a life gone by, dancing with tears in my eyes, living out a memory of a love that died. It's late, and I'm with my love alone. We drink to forget the coming storm. We love to the sound of our favorite song, over and over. It's time, and we're in each other's arms. It's time, but I don't think we really care. Dancing with tears in my eyes, weeping for the memory of a life gone by. Dancing with tears in my eyes, living out a memory of a love that died. Dancing with tears in my eyes. This was released in 1984, peak year for nuclear fears, according to the writer. And the songs of that year reflected the collective angst. The narrator is driving home to see his beloved after learning World War III is imminent. When he gets home, he and his wife drink to forget the coming storm. In the video, there's a flash of light, and they disappear.